providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A divided Supreme Court upheld the broadest restrictions on campaign donations in nearly 30 years Wednesday, ruling the nation is better off with limits on the financial influence of deep-pocket donors, even if money can never be divorced from politics. Rooting out corruption, or even the appearance of it, justifies limitations on the free speech and free spending of contributors, candidates, and political parties, the court said in a 5-4 decision. George W. Bush found himself in the awkward position on Wednesday of calling the leaders of France, Germany, and Russia to ask them to forgive Iraq's debts just a day after the Pentagon excluded those countries and others from $18 billion in American-financed Iraqi reconstruction projects. White House officials were fuming about the timing and the tone of the Pentagon's directive, even while conceding that they had approved the Pentagon policy of limiting contracts to 63 countries that have given the United States political or military aid in Iraq. Many countries excluded from the list, including close allies like Canada, reacted angrily on Wednesday to the Pentagon action. They were incensed in part by the Pentagon's explanation in a memorandum that the restrictions were required for the protection of the essential security interests of the United States. Plans to deploy the 1st Battalion of Iraq's new army are in doubt because a third of the soldiers trained by the U.S. occupation authority have quit, defense officials said Wednesday. Touted as a key to Iraq's future, the 700-man battalion lost some 250 men over recent weeks as they were preparing to begin operations this month, Pentagon officials said. The battalion was highly celebrated when the newly retrained soldiers completed a 9-week basic training course in early October. The graduates, including 65 officers, were to be the core of an all-Iraqi army. It was uncertain exactly why a third abandoned their new jobs, though some had complained that the starting pay, $60 a month for privates, was too low. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
Arvin, California Mayor Juan Olivares had just one request of a Kern County Sheriff's deputy during a traffic stop. Don't call me dude. Olivares planned to file an official complaint with the Sheriff's Department, seeking to have the deputy fired for what he called disrespectful behavior. The deputy stopped Olivares on November 23rd. Olivares, who was driving, said he was ticketed for having illegally tinted windows on his vehicle, and a passenger received a citation for having an open container of beer. Olivares didn't dispute the charges. He just took issue with being called dude. This is Don Waller in New York, dude.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
Calling Law and Order. I don't mean the American ideal of justice. In this case, I'd settle for the Law and Order television show. I'm talking about a corporate story that would have made great television news, but the media missed it. Perhaps they were too busy covering George W. posing with the Queen of England on this same day to be able to cover a story about the theft of billions of dollars from us taxpayers. So why not call on fiction to give us the news? After all, Mark Twain observed, the difference between fact and fiction is that fiction has to be believable. This factual story of finagling seems unbelievable, but the fictitious Law and Order show would not have to stretch to dramatize it, for Senator Carl Levin provided all the drama a producer could want. KPMG, the accounting giant, was caught illegally designing and selling tax shelters whose sole purpose was to allow the wealthiest Americans to escape paying their taxes to Uncle Sam. In just 4 years, these rich folks dodged $1.4 billion in taxes they owed, and KPMG collected $124 million from them in tax avoidance fees. In November, KPMG was grilled by Senator Levin. In an investigative hearing, a supervising partner of KPMG's tax scam ducked and dodged, claiming he knew nothing. But Levin had internal emails, including one written by this guy, saying that the scams were, quote, designed to dodge taxes. The guy shucked and jived, trying to blame subordinates while also claiming that these were legitimate investments that only coincidentally allowed tax avoidance. But Levin leaned in, asking, did you write designed, yes or no? The guy's voice grew tighter. Levin pressed harder. The Senate room grew silent. And the KPMG man finally whined, I don't know how to change my answer. Then, in a made-for-TV moment, Levin dryly said, try an honest answer. This is Jim Hightower saying, now that would have been great television.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Friends, you don't like the facts, you don't like the news, well, you can always do what the Bush administration did yesterday, just make up a few facts and change history. MSNBC reported yesterday that the administration completed, quote, a comprehensive revision of the gross domestic product, end quote. The percent, the revisions conveniently found that the economy, quote, shrank by 0.5% at an annual rate in the July-September quarter of 2000, end quote. Now, this was the last quarter, or the next to the last quarter, that Bill Clinton was running the country. Now the revised figures will be used, quote, by administration officials to bolster their contention that President Bush inherited a recession when he took office in January of 2001. That's going to be his campaign claim. The only problem is, it ain't true. The real statistics, National Bureau of Economic Research, the official arbiter of this, says, sorry, the recession began in March of 2001, 3 months after George Bush took office. And they're sticking by it. And this is the official bunch. But the Bush administration has come up with a new set of numbers to use in their campaign ads. So, you know, if you don't like the facts, just lie. It has worked so well for this administration. Actually, I think it may be coming to an end. The line about clean air, line about the war in Iraq, line about the White House leaker, line, it just goes on and on and on, the lies of this administration. And the chickens are coming home to roost. The rest of the world, in fact, is starting to get very concerned. Before I get to that, by the way, just, you know, welcome to the Tom Hartman program here on the IE America Radio Network. Today, day 150, 150 days since Robert Novak outed Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, the CIA agent, brought down an entire multi-country corporate front for the CIA, put a number of CIA agents out of business, might have led to the death of several agents. The administration has refused to allow us to know the situation. And will we find out who the senior administration official is who leaked that information?
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. Day 304 in the search for weapons of mass distraction, day 790 in the search for the anthrax killer, and day 813 in the search for Osama bin Laden. Today, December 11th, 2003, Thursday. The rest of the world is starting to get a little worried about George Bush running the economy off the road. And what I really want to get into this hour, by the way, is it time for public financing of campaigns? But before we get to that, just a few things in the news. One of the world's largest bond management firms just issued a red alert to their member subscribers, and I'm not going to name the company because this is one of those documents that supposed you pay to subscribe. You know, and this is a company that handles in the neighborhood of $500 billion in money. And it costs. I got this from somebody else who got it, they're very concerned. They're very concerned about what they refer to as the Fed's reflationary policies. That is, things that may lead to inflation, pumping money directly into commercial banks to bolster security markets, has created the potential for, quote, complete chaos in the bond market, end quote. And why? Because we are now having to borrow so much money from China, Japan, and Europe in order to finance our war in Iraq, in order to finance our Medicaid program, in order to finance our Pentagon, our $400 billion Pentagon expense, in order to keep our government alive. Because we are borrowing all this money from these folks so that we can hand checks to the richest among us, and even the middle class, of course. You know, George Bush's tax breaks went to pretty much everybody, except those who are the working poor, the people who would have spent it the fastest. And in order to hand that money over to people, we had to borrow it from somebody. We had to borrow, and we borrowed a lot of it. We borrowed a lot of it from China and Japan. And now, one of the biggest companies in the world that handles other people's monies is freaked about this. With this dependent on foreign capital inflows, foreign investors, particularly in Japan and China, have been financing the U.S. wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but this also means that foreigners have huge claims on the U.S. economy, which threaten U.S. economic independence and make the U.S. extremely vulnerable to what this company calls geopolitical risks. Now, what is a geopolitical risk? It means basically that if we were to anger China enough, and China has become the largest purchaser of U.S. debt now recently. If we were to anger China enough, they could simply say, number one, we're not going to buy any more of your debt, which would cause the price of it to go sky high. The fancy way of the simple way of saying the price of our debt goes sky high is to say interest rates would explode through the roof, because the Treasury Department would have to start offering higher and higher interest rates to encourage people to buy our debt so that they make a higher guaranteed return. In fact, it's already happening. Look at the long-term trends on Treasuries and T-bills and T-bonds, and they're trending upward. Just like the price of gold yesterday was, what, a 407, 410, something like that. I mean, it's over $400. That doesn't mean gold is becoming more valuable. Gold has always had the same value it has. What it means is that the dollar's becoming worth less. And the dollar's becoming worth less because this administration is trying to hype the economy in order to get George Bush reelected in 2004, and they're doing it on a credit card. This is a credit card economy. They are borrowing from the Chinese. The Chinese are like the bank that holds the credit card. They are borrowing from the Chinese and the Japanese and the Europeans and the Saudis. And the Saudis were one of the biggest funders of our national debt 15, 20 years ago. And they're borrowing from all these countries in order to be able to fund our tax break. And the consequence of that is that if any of them were to tell us to take a leap, our economy, we would be going down the road that Germany went down in the 1920s. It could take you where you had people leaving, you know, being paid twice a day at noon and at the end of the day in cash, so that they could go out and buy things before the price went up, because the prices were going up every few hours. The same thing was happening in Argentina a while ago. I was down there. I saw the tail end of it. What a mess. Why? Because the government was engaging massively in debt. Argentina, as I recall, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. My recollection is that their debt was running around 7% of gross domestic product. We're now pushing 5%. The World Bank has warned the Bush administration. The World Bank has warned the Bush administration that they are being fiscally irresponsible, and this is dangerous behavior. So what does this big investment advice company, this big investment company say the options are? They are suggesting, and of course this is something that will be read by people in the White House. They're all multimillionaires to begin with. This company probably has a lot of their cash. They are saying that we have basically two options. That Bush has made us so bankrupt, has spent so much more money than he has, that the value of our money has collapsed as a result of both the debt and the current account deficit, our trade deficit. In other words, we're buying so many more things than we're selling overseas, which is the consequence, in large part, of the wonders of NAFTA and GATT, brought to you by Bill Clinton. That these two things, our trade deficit and our domestic deficit, are so bad that we would have to devalue the dollar by 30 to 40%, which means everything we buy everywhere else in the world would instantly become 30 to 40% more expensive, including oil, which would then, of course, drive an explosion of inflation in the United States, because so much of the stuff now that we use in the United States, we're buying from overseas, from the junk at Walmart, or the stuff at Walmart, you know, including the junk, to what you're buying at the gas pump. Even a good chunk of the fresh vegetables and fruits we're eating now are coming from overseas. I mean, everything would go up in price, and that would start the spiral. That's option A. That's actually option B. That's not the one they're suggesting. That's the fallback. That's what's going to have to happen if option A isn't followed. Option A is that we must maintain U.S. military superiority over the world. The report repeatedly emphasizes this, so that no other nation will be willing to challenge us, so that we can essentially force other nations to go along with the reinvention of Reaganomics here. Reaganomics that threw our economy so badly in the toilet that Ronald Reagan had to raise taxes 6 times out of the 8 years he was president. And then his follower, George Bush Sr., had to raise taxes hugely. And Bill Clinton had to raise taxes. I mean, you had three presidents over a 20-year period, making up nearly for the damage done by one act of Ronald Reagan. And finally, Bill Clinton pulled the fat out of the fire. I mean, he finally got us to the point where we actually had balanced budgets for the first time. The last president to propose a balanced budget was Jimmy Carter. And as I recall, the last president before him was Jack Kennedy. I could be wrong on that. I have to go back and look, but it's been a while. It's infrequent with these Republicans in office. So are we going to maintain our power around the world? Now, at the same time that this is happening, now here's the real kicker. Yesterday, this is the Associated Press, Caracas, the OPEC Secretary General Alvaro Silva said the organization is considering trading oil in euros to compensate for the U.S. dollar's decline in value. Do you know what that would mean? It would mean instantly oil prices would just explode, because the dollar which was more or less $1 equals 1 euro just 5 years ago during the Clinton administration, is now it takes $1.22 to buy a euro. This could be a disaster for the United States, but it's what the rest of the world needs because of the irresponsible fiscal policy of George Bush. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's to my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear, we did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the It's Not Your Fault You Didn't Know show. We're talking about the best way to spend your weekends, and we have two special guests right now. On the phone is the Terminator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Arnold. And our other guest in the studio is George W. How are you today, Mr. Bush?
What's the matter?
Okay, all of our listeners want to know what you do on your weekends. Well, I'm here to tell you that you can listen to the best of left-of-center political talk radio on Sundays now on IE America Radio Network.
That's amazing.
George, yeah, your final words.
Stop it!
Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, same time. Have a nice day.
Just shut up!
The best of progressive talk radio can be heard on Sundays now on IE America Radio Network. For more information, call 1-800-397-8255 or go to IEAmericaRadio.com.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. truth. It knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation. And marches alone can't bring innovation. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Well, the ACLU, which had joined up with the National Rifle Association and a few other groups in opposing McCain-Feingold, yesterday issued a news release. The American Civil Liberties Union today criticized the Supreme Court's decision upholding major provisions of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law as an unprecedented restriction on core political speech that is inconsistent with basic First Amendment values. See, now here's... To put this in perspective, the bottom line is what happened here is that the Supreme Court said the McCain-Feingold Act, the parts of the McCain-Feingold Act that say that soft money contributions, that you can't just call up, a politician can't just call up some corporation and say, I want you to throw $1 million at my campaign. Or I want X number of dollars. I mean, they used to be basically like shakedowns. You read the history of George W. in Texas and his association. There's a book called George W. Bush's Chemical Dependence, and it's about his affiliation with the chemical industry in Texas. And it's just amazing how, you know, he and his campaign would just shake down these companies, these entire industries. And McCain-Feingold, and of course George Bush wasn't the only one to do that. I mean, Democrats have been doing it forever. Republicans are doing it. I mean, he's just one of the most egregious examples, because virtually all of the major legislation that he proposed as governor was just like all of the major legislation that he has now proposed as president, legislation that will help corporations rather than people. But in any case, the bottom line here is that that's now illegal. And so only hard money can come in, hard money being an actual person writing an actual check to an actual candidate or a party, and that the limits are $2,000 per person per candidate, or it's either 20 or 25,000, I think it's 25,000 per party per year, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up fast. You get a lot of people contributing. As you can see with Howard Dean, he's raised $25 million now with an average check size of $77, whereas George Bush now has raised over $100 million, $110 million so far. And his average check size is $2,000. Everybody's writing $2,000 checks, and he's got his pioneers and his rangers out there aggregating these things, bundling them. You know, going to all of the employees in their corporation and saying, okay, everybody's getting a $2,000 bonus this year. By the way, I want you to write a $2,000 check to George Bush. And get together all these checks and give them to George Bush. And then they get to sit at the table or write the energy policy, as the case may be. So, you know, back in the days of the founders, number one, there were ferocious inheritance laws. That's why there are no dynasties or empires left over from the Revolutionary era. The inheritance laws started going away after the Civil War. And number two, you had very strong laws that prevented corporations from accumulating money, because most corporations, up until the 1860s, 1870s, corporations had to dissolve themselves within 40 years and start over. You know, a corporation couldn't live any longer than a person could be productive in the workplace, and that was assumed to be back then 40 years. And there were very strong limits. You know, it was illegal for corporations to give money to political candidates. So this wasn't an issue 100 years ago. But things have changed now, and we've got this process that's been corrupted. What are the solutions? How do we deal with this? What is going to be the fallout of yesterday's Supreme Court case? Is this going to be the beginning of public financing of campaigns? What would that look like? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take a Leave Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Foreign fish are moving up the Mississippi River to find a place that seems more like home. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Two species of Asian carp were imported into the United States in the 1970s to clean up algae at fish farms in some southern states. The carp escaped and got into the Mississippi River through drainage systems, flooding, and runoff. The fish are like underwater vacuum cleaners, and people in the upper Midwest are worried about what they'll do as they swim upstream. Jerry Rasmussen is a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says the bighead and silver carp eat huge amounts of tiny plants and animals known as plankton. Rasmussen says they're eating up the stuff native fish need to survive.
All young fish feed on the small plankton, so a species coming in and consuming huge volumes of this material obviously is going to impact the system significantly.
Rasmussen says the carp are moving north to find waters that are more like their native homes in China. The carp could enter the Great Lakes through a canal in Chicago that connects the watershed of the Mississippi River to Lake Michigan.
The southern end of the silver carp range in China is really right about the latitude of Chicago. And so we feel that the reason we're seeing this northward migration of these critters is that they're looking for more desirable, cooler water habitats that they like better. And so if they got through Chicago, through the canal there, they could potentially spread all the way far into Canada.
An electric barrier has been built in the Chicago canal to try to stop the carp. Elsewhere in the upper Midwest, people are starting to worry about what will happen as the fish move further up the Mississippi and reach the many rivers and streams that feed into it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Fudgy.
Camel.
Dick-dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
narwhal,
Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Zebra.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We're taking care of business here on the IE America Radio Network. This is Tom Hartman. And is it time for public financing of campaigns? By the way, we are broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, also streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite network, stream 145. Greetings to Gwen, who just got a Sirius receiver, and to all the other folks. It's funny, I've gotten a number of emails over the last month or three, from people who say, I went out and I bought the Sirius satellite radio just to get your show. And, of course, we have a lot of folks listening on terrestrial radio stations as well, which I encourage. And beaming around the planet on a variety of web stations, ieamericaradio.com, of course, this network's stream, radiopower.org,
and Live365.com with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find it all, links to all of them, from TomHartmann.com, www.TomHartmann.com. Along with a fellow named Mike Toth just put together an extraordinary collection, over 100 hours of audio, audio clips of me ranting on various topics or interviewing various folks, remnants of this show, archives of this show. You'll find them all on our website there. It's you can listen to it as you wish. Anyhow, back to campaign finance reform. Let's just take a quick look here at what happened. The NRA is now talking about buying a radio station to get around this. See, this is the problem. When organizations are powerful enough, large enough and powerful enough. I mean, this was not even on the radar screen in 1787 when the Constitution was drafted. Wasn't even on the they had evicted the British East India Company, and they figured, that's it. We got rid of those bums. No corporation is ever going to take over America again. I mean, keep in mind, the British East India Company essentially founded America. Jamestown, named after King James, who was at the time the largest stockholder in the East India Company, was founded in, what, 1607, as I recall, here in North America, in the state of Virginia, named after the Virgin Queen, Queen Elizabeth I, who was the one who created the British East India Company, and King James inherited her stock when she died. It was founded by the East India Company, and the Boston Tea Party was we don't want those thinking corporations running our country. But now we have corporations that are so large and so powerful, and that have combined themselves into these huge, what used to be called monopolies or trusts. So you've got a situation where you have, for example, one of the nation's largest defense contractors providing news to America. And the NRA thinks, hey, there's something wrong with the fact that MSNBC and CNBC and NBC are owned by GE, which is a defense contractor and makes nuclear power plants. And GE may not be telling those folks, don't do an expose on GE's pollution of such and such a town, or, you know, the PCBs in the Hudson River, or let's not talk about the dangers of nuclear power. They're not saying that. But come on, we all know which side our bread is buttered on. Human beings are human beings. My suggestion, of course, is that we go back to the laws as they were before Ronald Reagan came along, when he stopped enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act. And we say, you know, basically a corporation can do one thing. You want to do news? Great. Do news. But don't also be a defense contractor. Let somebody else do that. That the aggregation of all these different functions under the umbrella of one corporation and one CEO is creating new political dynasties and empires, new centers of power in America that are corruptive of, disruptive to democracy itself. So in response to this, John McCain and Russell Feingold introduced this thing into the Senate. It's generally called the McCain-Feingold bill. And, of course, it got taken before the Supreme Court. A coalition of people challenged it. Included Republican Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the Republican Party, the California Democratic Party, the AFL-CIO, the National Rifle Association, the ACLU, and the Chambers of Commerce. And they said, wait a minute. This law has a provision that says 60 days out from an election, a special interest group can't run an ad supporting a candidate. And that is an unfair, you know, the First Amendment says Congress shall pass no laws infringing freedom of the press. And this is a clear violation of that. And frankly, I agree. This is a violation of freedom of the press. And the Supreme Court essentially agreed. But they said, however, there is a worse evil. I mean, this isn't their words, but you read the decision. There is a worse evil than harming freedom of speech. And that is the evil of the corruption of the political process. If our political process in the United States is not predictably clean and honest, then what do we have? We don't have a democracy anymore. So McCain-Feingold will clean up politics, and that's going to fix it. Well, the flip side of that, of course, is what Justices John Paul Stevens and Sandra Day O'Connor actually said in their ruling, in which they ruled McCain-Feingold must stand. They said, we are under no illusion. Money, like water, will always find an outlet. What problems will arise and how Congress will respond are concerns for another day. In other words, they're saying basically we're in favor of doing anything we can to reform to get corporate money out of politics in America. But we're not legislators. We don't make the laws. We just decide whether or not they're consistent with the Constitution. You know, the Supreme Court is the court of last resort. That's all. This was, by the way, the quote, liberal wing of the court. David Souter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and John Paul Stevens voted in favor of McCain-Feingold. The conservative wing of the court, Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Rehnquist voted against it. And Sandra Day O'Connor was the swing vote, as is so often the case, voting in favor of McCain-Feingold. Mary Boyle, a spokeswoman for the Common Cause Citizen Activist Group, one of Nader's groups that supports campaign finance reform, said the ruling, quote, severs the toxic link between donors who write six-figure checks and people in power at the highest level of government. Well, here's my take on this. I think that number one, we must make our democracy more democratic. And that means instant runoff voting. We're not going to go to a parliamentary form of government any day soon. We're not going to amend the Constitution like that. So, the problem is that in the United States we have a system that is not intentionally designed. I mean, it wasn't until 1841 that John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation. And so, you know, nobody knew how to do what they do in England right now, for example. Nobody had figured it out. So we came up with this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all form of elections. Whoever gets the majority of the votes wins the election. And the founders clearly saw the problems in that. James Madison, in Federalist No. 10 and Federalist No. 47, wrote at length begging people not to form political parties. They were called factions back then. He said, we can't have this. Well, we got them anyway. I mean, the Federalists emerged out of the Constitution, out of the constitutional process, and then the Republicans emerged out of the Federalists, and then the Democrats emerged out of the Federalists, and then the Democrats and the Republicans got together under Thomas Jefferson in the late 1790s. And by 1800, they were referred to as the Democratic Republicans. And then in the 1830s, as I recall, under Andrew Jackson, they dropped the word Republican from their name and simply called themselves the Democrats. So the Democratic Party of today was founded by Thomas Jefferson. It's the oldest and longest-lasting political party in the history of the world, by the way. Just an interesting little bit of trivia. But the bottom line is that we have a two-party system in this country because we have this unique type of election that only a few other democracies have. There's only about five other democracies in the world out of the 81 democracies on Earth, on the planet. There's only about five other ones that have this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all type of election. So if you have two candidates and one gets 51%, then the 49% of people who would like to have a say in government have no say. Whereas in a proportional representation system, if 49% of the people vote for one party and 51% of the people vote for the other party, then 49% of the seats in the House of Representatives are filled by that party that got 49% of the vote, and 51% of the seats are filled by the party that got 51% of the vote. And what that does is it makes it possible for third and fourth and fifth parties. So you can have a third party take 20% of the vote, and you got the other two parties each taking 40% of the vote. And now in Parliament, you have, you know, the Greens with 20% of the vote in Germany, for example. I think it's at 13% right now. And you've got, you know, another party with 40%, and you form coalitions and you work things out. And it's actually a more democratic process. Well, we can't do that in the United States because it would require, you know, you would have to completely rewrite the Constitution. But what we can do is we can go to instant runoff voting. Instant runoff voting is where you vote for your first choice, and if that guy doesn't get it, your second choice. So to use the example of the last election, I voted for Al Gore, but my second choice, I'm sorry, I voted for Ralph Nader, but my second choice would have been Al Gore. And so when they tally up the vote, they say, okay, Al Gore didn't get 50% of the vote. Nobody got 50% of the vote. Neither did George W. Bush. Because Nader got, 3 million votes, something like that. And so what we do is we take everybody's second choice. Those candidates, we strip out the candidates from the first choice who clearly didn't make it, and we take the second choice and replace them with that. So my Ralph Nader vote would become an Al Gore vote because that was my second choice. And Australia has done this. It works very well. They had a system like ours. They now do this. And a lot of states around the United States, a lot of communities are doing this. It works very well. So you do that to make democracy larger. What that does is it encourages the growth of third parties. It makes the Greens viable. It makes the progressives here in Vermont viable. I mean, we have a Republican governor here in Vermont right now who is doing some, he's an okay guy, but he's doing some pretty bizarre stuff, as Republicans are wont to do. And he's doing it, and he got less than a majority of the vote. He got like something like 47% of the vote. Why? Because the progressives pulled 20% of the vote. If you had combined the progressives and the Democrats, as I think most people would do if they had a first and second choice, then you'd have at least a governor that actually represented the majority, the will of the majority of the people of Vermont, and the same thing with the nation. So anyhow, you do IRV, and then in addition to that, you do public financing of campaigns. If everybody kicked in $5 a year, you know that little box you check on your income tax? I think it's up to $3 now. Well, if it's just even $3, we have somewhere between 100 and 150 million people working in the United States, depending on whose numbers you use and how you define working and how you define tax paying. But say it's 100 million people. You get 100 million people kicking in $3, that's $300 million. That's 3, 6, 9, 12. That's $1.2 billion every 4 years for the presidential election cycle. That's more money than was spent in the 2000 elections. I mean, the mechanism's already in place. The problem is right now, if we were to do public financing of elections, is that probably the Republicans and Democrats would try and grab it all. And that's why I think it needs to be combined with IRV, instant runoff voting. We need a comprehensive reform of our electoral process that says, number one, corporations, that actually nobody can be giving money to political candidates or trying to influence elections the way that it's happening now. But particularly, let's get corporations out of the process to begin with. And secondly, you have public financing of elections, or as an alternative, let's use a system like they have in Great Britain, where you cap the spending at a low and rational level, and you require the media to carry debates with people. So you have, if you're going to run for the House of Commons in the United Kingdom and Great Britain, you can't spend more than $100,000. Well, you're not going to get very deeply in debt to somebody with $100,000. And in our third hour today, I'm going to share with you how deeply in debt the Bush administration has gone to the farm. I mean, just some shocking revelations here that just came out of this Medicare bill. This stuff just came out today. In our second hour, we're going to interview the author of a new book on ADHD, me. I'm going to interview myself next hour. We'll get into this. But anyhow, that kind of corruption that we're going to talk about in our third hour, it wouldn't be able to happen. And I think that the Supreme Court is essentially saying, please do something like this. Read the decision. Here it is, $2,000 per donor now, $25,000 per donor to political parties. But that's it. And the New York Times says, practically speaking, Those who have skillfully found ways to raise such contributions in large amounts will hold the largest sword in next year's elections. At the top of the list is President Bush, who's established a vast network of business executives and has amassed roughly $110 million so far this year. Dean has raised $25 million. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution, asks,
what's complete freedom? For me, it's an open road with the top down. It's my bare arms getting warmed by the sun. It's my bare arms without a trace of psoriasis.
Complete freedom, brought to you by the complete relief of Dermarest psoriasis. Unlike brands which only relieve itching and inflammation, Dermarest psoriasis also removes the embarrassing scales, allowing healthy skin to grow.
Healthy skin? That's complete freedom.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Well, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Tom Hartman Show.
We caught somebody doing something right. Fred D'Amato, Mount Pocono, Pennsylvania. He put a sign out in his front yard to support our troops, impeach the Bush administration. Of course, Mount Pocono jumped all over him. The borough councilman, Francis O'Boyle, said, "The last couple words is what's the problem. I don't think it's right to put up a sign like that and say those things." The lawyer says it's protected First Amendment speech. John Finnerty, the borough council president, says, "Well, if we could all express our thoughts on a piece of plywood, just think what the neighborhood would look like. It might be a slight infringement of First Amendment rights," making him take down his sign. He's facing $500 a day fines for not having his sign. However, the story in the newspaper of Mount Pocono, New York, says that D'Amato removed the sign, but on Sunday said he planned to put it back up again. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Last evening sky, all the birds are leaving. How can they know it's time for them to go?
And welcome back. It's Talk Radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here on the IE America Radio Network. Court ruling affirms new landscape of campaign finance. This article by Glenn Justice in the New York Times. He points out that now both parties will have to operate on a steady diet of hard money contributions, which Republicans have been far more adept at soliciting. Bush has his network of rangers and pioneers in place. The Democrats have nothing like that. And the Democrats have traditionally or historically, certainly over the last 10, 15 years, relied more heavily on soft money than the Republicans have. And this is going to hurt them, I think. Common, one of Nader's groups, I believe it is, publiccampaign.org, has some great information on how clean money works, clean elections, and campaign reform works. www.publiccampaign.org, if you want to see, you know, some ideas on how this thing might work out. And I think they make some great suggestions. My only concern is that public financing, without changing the way that our voting system works to accommodate third parties, is going to end up being it's going to be a pigs of the trough thing for the two major parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. And yeah, that's the system we have, and we're stuck with it. And that's why I think it's important in this coming campaign to vote for whoever the Democrat is in office. At least that's what I'm going to do, regardless of our persuasion. Another interesting thing, I don't know if you saw Tom Hayden's thing about, you know, will Kucinich throw his support to Howard Dean? And will Kucinich supporters go with Dean, or are they going to go with a Green Party candidate? Or are they just going to sit the thing out, being all upset if Kucinich is not nominated for the Democratic presidential candidate? Interesting times. But anyhow, IRV plus public financing. We could have clean elections in America. Things could work better. We could revitalize, reinvigorate democracy in America. We can do it. So, you know, pass it along to your elected officials. Tell them I told you to call. This is Tom Hartman. Our program brought to you, by the way, by Small Dog Electronics. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour. Stick around.
But this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush found himself in the awkward position on Wednesday of calling the leaders of France, Germany, and Russia to ask them to forgive Iraq's debts just a day after the Pentagon excluded those countries and others from $18 billion in American-financed Iraqi reconstruction projects. White House officials were fuming about the timing and the tone of the Pentagon's directive, even while conceding that they had approved the Pentagon policy of limiting contracts to 63 countries that have given the United States political or military aid in Iraq. Many countries excluded from the list, including close allies like Canada, reacted angrily on Wednesday to the Pentagon action. They were incensed in part by the Pentagon's explanation in a memorandum that the restrictions were required for the protection of the essential security interests of the United States. A divided Supreme Court upheld the broadest restrictions on campaign donations in nearly 30 years Wednesday, ruling the nation is better off with limits on the financial influence of deep-pocket donors, even if money can never be divorced from politics. Rooting out corruption, or even the appearance of it, justifies limitations on the free speech and free spending of contributors, candidates, and political parties, the court said in a 5-4 decision. President Nixon apparently didn't think much of Ronald Reagan, calling his fellow California Republican strange and an uncomfortable man to be around, according to White House tapes released on Wednesday. The comments are included in 240 hours of Nixon White House tape recordings from July through October 1972 that were released by the National Archives. Nixon is heard discussing his reelection campaign, ways to end the Vietnam War, and the Watergate scandal that eventually brought down his administration. In an interview years later, Nixon was quoted as saying Reagan's economic policies were unduly harsh and cautioned against giving him too much credit for winning the Cold War. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
A man faces a year in jail for mowing under the influence. The mower mess began when Barry Davis was pulled over by Hartford police in August as he was weaving down the street on his riding lawnmower. He was reportedly riding to a friend's house to get another beer. A breathalyzer test revealed that Davis had a blood alcohol content of 0.18, nearly twice the legal limit, according to police. He was arrested and charged with drunken driving, his third such offense. Davis pleaded not guilty, and his jury trial is slated for February. If convicted, he could face up to a year in prison. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Well, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done.
A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's been my fiance for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Calling Law and Order. I don't mean the American ideal of justice. In this case, I'd settle for the Law and Order television show. I'm talking about a corporate story that would have made great television news, but the media missed it. Perhaps they were too busy covering George W. posing with the Queen of England on this same day to be able to cover a story about the theft of billions of dollars from us taxpayers. So why not call on fiction to give us the news? After all, Mark Twain observed, the difference between fact and fiction is that fiction has to be believable. This factual story of finagling seems unbelievable, but the fictitious Law and Order show would not have to stretch to dramatize it, for Senator Carl Levin provided all the drama a producer could want. KPMG, the accounting giant, was caught illegally designing and selling tax shelters whose sole purpose was to allow the wealthiest Americans to escape paying their taxes to Uncle Sam. In just 4 years, these rich folks dodged $1.4 billion in taxes they owed, and KPMG collected $124 million from them in tax avoidance fees. In November, KPMG was grilled by Senator Levin. In an investigative hearing, a supervising partner of KPMG's tax scam ducked and dodged, claiming he knew nothing. But Levin had internal emails, including one written by this guy, saying that the scams were, quote, designed to dodge taxes. The guy shucked and jived, trying to blame subordinates while also claiming that these were legitimate investments that only coincidentally allowed tax avoidance. But Levin leaned in, asking, did you write designed, yes or no? The guy's voice grew tighter. Levin pressed harder. The Senate room grew silent. And the KPMG man finally whined, I don't know how to change my answer. Then, in a made-for-TV moment, Levin dryly said, try an honest answer. This is Jim Hightower saying, now that would have been great television.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we are talking today, this hour, every Thursday afternoon in our second hour, we try to have on something just a little bit out of the mainstream, a little bit wacky, a little bit strange, a guest who has a perspective that's not your normal perspective, and we call it our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong?
Yep, might be. And in this, at least the first half hour here, the first little bit of the show, I'm just going to go through this very quickly, and we'll see if it stirs up some comments and feedbacks and thoughts from you, and if not, then we'll go back to politics. But I'm going to interview the author of a new book. It's called The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child. It just came out a month or so ago from Inner Traditions Press. It's available in bookstores all over the country and on Amazon.com and everywhere else. And the author is Tom Hartman, me. And so I'm not going to quite interview myself, but what I wanted to, I do want to talk about attention deficit disorder a little bit here, because this is a topic that really may have something to do with the future of this country. When you look at the founders of this nation, you discover that a lot of them, particularly Sam Adams, Ben Franklin, I mean, Ben Franklin is a classic case of attention deficit disorder and adult attention deficit. Here's a guy who had 34 careers in his life. His last job was creating the United States of America. He never did one thing for more than 3 years in his entire life. He got thrown out of school as a kid. He was publishing editorials in his brother's newspaper that landed his brother in jail. On and on it goes. I mean, he was a classic case. And then you look at Thomas Paine, another classic case of ADHD. And many of the founders clearly were like this. Well, now we see this study that just came out. This was released on December 8th. The headline, Attention Deficit Drugs May Have Long-Term Effects, Study Suggests, Impact on Growing Brains. And just by coincidence, I had written a chapter about this in my book, The Edison Gene. Drugs given to children. I'm reading from the story. This is a Reuters story, December 8th. Drugs given to children to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder could have long-term effects on their growing brains, suggests a study on rats. They found out that when they gave adolescent and pre-adolescent rats, child rats, Ritalin, that later in life, while they were on the one hand less likely to use cocaine, on the other hand, they often acted clinically depressed and behaved differently from the rats given dummy injections as children. When they matured, the rats were tested for what's called learned helplessness. This is a phrase that Seligman came up with, Dr. Seligman. And he wrote a book called Learned Optimism, a number of books. In fact, he's got a new one out. And Martin Seligman. And he had done these studies on dogs where they discovered that if you restrained them in a harness and gave them shocks, that they would learn very quickly to be helpless. They would just give up. And that helplessness would just echo all through their whole entire lives, and they would become then clinically depressed, and the dog is doomed. And it looks like giving Ritalin to kids produces the same result, at least in rats. We know it does in rats. We don't know about human children yet. And Dr. Thomas Insull, director of the National Institutes of Mental Health, in a commentary on the study, wrote, and I quote, "These three studies, these three good scientific peer-reviewed studies, remind us how limited our knowledge is of the neurochemical and functional characteristics of the human brain during childhood and adolescence and on the effects of psychotropic drugs with brain development." Now, I would suggest to you that the reason why the kids who take Ritalin grow up to be adults who are depressed and are helpless is because Ritalin suppresses their desire to be expressive. Really, really, one of the more interesting studies, and I talk about this in my book, is what was called the MTA study, this huge study that was done, the largest study ever funded of ADHD in the United States, funded by the National Institutes of Mental Health and other organizations. And in the footnotes of the study, in this little footnote down at the bottom, they pointed out that those kids on Ritalin, it was a study of which is more effective in helping kids with ADD in the classroom. Drugs, psychotherapy, drugs and psychotherapy, or nothing. And what they found was that the kids who were on drugs, their teachers said that they were doing better. And the kids with drugs and psychotherapy, their teachers said they were doing better. The kids with psychotherapy alone, their teachers said, well, they're okay. And the kids on nothing, their teachers said, well, this kid's got a problem. But the footnote to the study said that neither the drugs nor the psychotherapy had any impact on the kids' grades. So what was the difference? The drugs made the teachers like the kids better. You could boil the whole study down to that. That kids that are docile and quiet and don't cause problems and are not energetic and enthusiastic and creative are kids that teachers say, hey, cool. Not causing a problem in my classroom. And I have been suggesting for over a decade now. My first book on this topic was published in 1992. It's called ADD, A Different Perception, Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. And Time Magazine, in as I recall, it was March of 93, did a cover story on ADD, and they did a sidebar article inside that issue called Hail the Hyperactive Hunter, about Tom Hartman's new theory. And what I was saying back then was that, in my opinion, ADD is actually a collection of behaviors. The three primary characteristics of it are distractibility, impulsivity, and a need for high levels of stimulation. And that those three behaviors were actually useful things for the human race during our hunting-gathering era, and that in our post-industrial society, we don't consider them so useful. That distractibility is scanning your environment all the time. And if you're out in the forest looking for lunch, and you're not scanning your environment all the time, you're going to be at a terrible disadvantage, because you might miss that rabbit that just ran by that was going to be your lunch, or you might miss that bear standing right behind you that wants to make you its lunch. And in either case, you get weeded out of the gene pool. That's distractibility. Number two, impulsivity. Impulsivity is, in the dictionary, it's roughly defined as making decisions without realizing that you involved yourself in a thinking process. Behavior precedes cognition is the fancy way of saying it. And again, if you're out chasing a rabbit through the forest and a deer runs by, you don't have time to pull out a pad and a pencil and say, well, let's do a risk-benefit analysis. Let's think about this carefully. No, you make an instant decision, a snap judgment. That's called impulsivity. It would be a survival skill in a hunting-gathering world. And the need for high levels of stimulation. The kind of person who would wake up in the morning and say, you know what sounds like fun to me? What sounds like fun to me today is to go out there in the world where there's things that want to eat me as much as I want to eat them and find lunch. That sounds like fun. That kind of person would do really well in a hunting-gathering world. But the kind of person who gets up and says, you know, I'm not going to take any chances. I'll just stay here in the cave. You just let me know when the lions and tigers and bears have gone away, and then I'll come out. That kind of person would be at a terrible disadvantage in the hunting-gathering world. But in the agricultural world, we had fenced off the pastures. We had gotten rid of the predators. Everything's fine. We don't have to worry about dangers and threats. We don't need people who are vigilant. We don't need people who are highly active and energetic and who love all the stimulus of the hunt. No, what we want now are people who will plant rice, one seed after another, for hour after hour, day after day, year after year, generation after generation. Today we call these people tax accountants. And so what I suggested back in 1992 was that ADD was a genetically mediated or genetically passed along trait, since we see almost every ADD, anytime you see an ADD kid, there's an ADD parent hanging around someplace. Or aunts and uncles at the very worst, usually at least one parent. And that ADD was a genetically useful thing in the hunting-gathering world, and that in our world of today, in the hunting-gathering arena, it's still useful. That those people with ADD as adults make great entrepreneurs. They make the most successful salespeople. They are the most successful police officers. They're the most successful detectives. They're the most successful test pilots. They're the most successful soldiers, particularly in high-stress combat missions. They're the most successful. You go to an emergency room in a hospital and interview all the people who are there voluntarily, the people who asked to be, you know, the ER docs, the orderlies, the nurses, the people who asked for duty in the emergency room. And you're going to find from the docs at the top all the way down to the people emptying the bedpans, you're going to find a bunch of ADD people. Look at your EMTs, your emergency medical technicians. Pilots. I mean, there are so many professions where ADD is actually an advantage. Trial lawyers. In the media, it is rampant. Performance artists of any kind, that's living on the edge. That's an ADD characteristic. And so I came out back then and I said, you know, this might be actually a good thing, and we might be doing some harm to our society, to our culture, by drugging these kids. Instead of drugging them, why don't we change our schools to accommodate them? Because there are ways that you can change a public school so that it works for ADD kids, and it works actually even better than for the non-ADD kids. But the pharmaceutical industry makes $1 billion a year on ADD. It is an industry. There are legions of people out there who owe their income and their survival to ADD. And they are very invested in this being a disease. So when I came out with this proposal back in 92 that it wasn't a sickness, that it was simply a variation in human nature that has some positive aspects to it, boy, did they come after me. And I've had a 10-year running debate with several of the top psychologists in the field, both in the media and in various conferences and things and in books. And so then, this last year, an amazing new study came out that was published in the Journal of the American Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Sciences of the United States. An amazing study that not only validated my hypothesis, but provided a whole new insight into this. I'll tell you about it right after the break. And if you have any questions about this, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Well, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your soda's all a tickle and you're really in a pickle, and you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bruce Willis was in Iraq. Did you hear about this? He went to Telefar, I believe is the way you pronounce it. And he has a band, Accelerator, played some rock and roll, and, you know, there were hundreds of U.S. soldiers there. Anyway, after he did his rock and roll, he took the microphone. He said, we're here to support you, and that's fine, okay. But then he offered the soldiers listening $1 million out of his own pocket for the capture of Saddam Hussein. And then he said, and if you catch him, just give me 4 seconds with him. Isn't he just a man's man? Huh?
Who are you, then? Just another American who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo.
He's always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true.
Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. It's Tom Hartman. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, 1-800-511-MACS. And if you see this, the article in today's New York Times about the dangers of treating children with Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, Celexa, Lexapro, and Luvox, it appears that these drugs all increase the risk of self-harm and suicide in children and adolescents. This kind of stuff was coming out a couple of years ago when it was revealed that most of the kids who had gone into schools and shot up their friends, including at least one of the kids in the Columbine situation, had been taking one of these new SSRIs, these antidepressant drugs. They flatten affect. These drugs kind of disconnect you from your emotions. And so the theory goes that it might cause a child to have less empathy, less ability to feel what somebody else might feel, the kind of pain that another person might feel if you were to, for example, kill their child or their son or daughter and or them. And so they were more likely to go and commit murder. But now this study here, the FDA in June issued this thing asking doctors not to prescribe these drugs to kids. And they point out one big problem is that the data that seems to show a link between the drugs and suicide is privately held by the drug companies, and they are not releasing it. They're not going to tell us what they know. They're saying, we are persons. We have Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. You've heard that rant before. That's another one. Anyhow, I want to tell you what I discovered, this study that came out. And I'll do that after the next break because we've got a couple of callers here, and I don't want to keep you all on hold too long. Paul in Detroit's on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Well, Tom, quickly, you know, just as Oxycontin is a synthetic heroin, which is what Limbaugh was using, Ritalin and is the same form as methamphetamine. And both Ritalin and methamphetamines destroy the blood vessels around a person's heart.
Yeah, in spiked doses, they do that. They can lead to stroke. They can cause brain damage, and that's well documented by the U.S. agency that's responsible for drugs, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. The argument that the docs make, that the pharmaceutical industry makes, is that OxyContin in low doses for people who are really in pain is not addictive, and that Ritalin in low doses for people who really have ADD is not a problem. Now that's, you know, that's not me saying that, and although, frankly, I think that the dangers of Ritalin as an addictive drug are blown way out of proportion. But that's the official position of the medical industry. You disagree?
No, not at all. I got this information in regard to Ritalin and methamphetamine from a court case that Jeffrey Figer had with a Clausen boy that died at 9 years old, and in the autopsy, they found that the kid's blood vessels were highly damaged around his heart, and the same occurs with methamphetamine.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern about giving kids any kind of stimulant drugs, Paul, including caffeine. And, you know, what might be the long-term consequence of these? Because stimulant drugs alter nerve function. They alter brain function. And it looks, developing brains are very different than developed brains. I mean, there's all these processes. The frontal lobes, for example, that control inhibition, don't even actually start developing fully in a human being until you hit 12, 13 years old. And they don't finish their development until you're 21. And so there's, you know, and if you're subjecting kids to drugs during this period of time, it seems, certainly from the studies on rats and certainly from the studies done by the DEA on people who are recreationally using drugs, it alters in a permanent way, in many cases, brain function. And I think this is a real issue, something to worry about. Thanks for the call, Paul. Glenn in Tulsa, Monica in Santa Fe, hang on the line. I'll pick you up on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the real Free Speech Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Foreign fish are moving up the Mississippi River to find a place that seems more like home. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Two species of Asian carp were imported into the United States in the 1970s to clean up algae at fish farms in some southern states. The carp escaped and got into the Mississippi River through drainage systems, flooding, and runoff. The fish are like underwater vacuum cleaners, and people in the upper Midwest are worried about what they'll do as they swim upstream. Jerry Rasmussen is a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says the bighead and silver carp eat huge amounts of tiny plants and animals known as plankton. Rasmussen says they're eating up the stuff native fish need to survive.
All young fish feed on the small plankton, so a species coming in and consuming huge volumes of this material obviously is going to impact the system significantly.
Rasmussen says the carp are moving north to find waters that are more like their native homes in China. The carp could enter the Great Lakes through a canal in Chicago that connects the watershed of the Mississippi River to Lake Michigan.
The southern end of the silver carp range in China is really right about the latitude of Chicago. And so we feel that the reason we're seeing this northward migration of these critters is that they're looking for more desirable, cooler water habitats that they like better. And so if they got through Chicago, through the canal there, they could potentially spread all the way far into Canada.
An electric barrier has been built in the Chicago Canal to try to stop the carp. Elsewhere in the upper Midwest, people are starting to worry about what will happen as the fish move further up the Mississippi and reach the many rivers and streams that feed into it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. If the DRD47R allele originated 40,000 years ago, now this is the gene, the Edison gene, the gene that is apparently most responsible for ADHD. There are other genes associated with it, but this DRD4 gene, it's a dopamine receptor position 4, DRD4 gene, and then the 7-repeat allele, there's a variation of the gene. This from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. They point out, first of all, that they had studied. This was a study that was a huge study that was done worldwide. University of California Medical School at Irvine, Yale University Medical School, University of Beijing Medical School, and they tracked this gene back and found that it emerged into the human genome 40,000 years ago. That's when ADD first appeared, and that it has been continuously under what they call positive selection ever since, meaning it's doing something good. I mean, there are genetic diseases that don't do things that are good. You know, Tay-Sachs disease or sickle cell anemia. Well, sickle cell anemia actually does something good. It protects you from malaria, but it's not useful in the United States. It is useful in Africa. But everybody had thought, you know, what is this? But it turns out that it has been under positive selection. And this is how they wrapped up this article in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the top scientific journal in the United States. If this allele originated 40,000 years ago, one might be asked, what was occurring at that time in human history? It is tempting to speculate that the major expansion of humans that occurred at that time, the appearance of radical new technology, the Upper Paleolithic, and or the development of agriculture could be related to the increase in the DRD47R allele frequency. Perhaps individuals with personality traits such as novelty-seeking, perseverance, etc., drove the expansion and partial replacement throughout the world. In other words, to boil it down, this study that came out last year essentially suggested that ADHD is responsible for modern civilization, which is why I call my book The Edison Gene, because Thomas Edison was the poster boy for ADHD. He was thrown out of school at the age of seven after just 3 or 4 months of public school. And his school teacher saying that he was stupid and he was dumb and he was obstinate. His mother homeschooled him until he was 12 or 13. When he was 14, he went off and started earning his own living. And the world, you would not be listening to me right now if he had not been alive. He invented the microphone. He invented the loudspeaker. You wouldn't be watching the electric light bulb, and on it goes. ADD has transformed Tom Paine and Ben Franklin's ADD drove them, and I would say in some ways, to create the United States of America. Thomas Edison's ADD helped him transform the planet. And we are saying, oh, these kids, they're a problem in the classroom. Let's load them up on pharmaceuticals. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Glenn.
You know, I'm an ADHD coach, and one of the problems I see with this whole subject is there seem to be two camps, even at a convention, where you have those who see ADHD as a disease to be cured, as opposed to a talent to be celebrated. You know,
yeah.
I recently interviewed for the New Focus newsletter this guy has a good famous program for creating discipline for your kids and surviving your teens. And, you know, it puts the problem on the kids rather than on the parents. You know, these are some of the statements were just amazing. In that he was saying things like, these people are irritating. ADHD is different from anxiety and depression, where others automatically feel sympathetic. ADHD often looks like lazy, and that's hard to muster sympathy about. The symptoms turn off other people, and then when they're turned off, they're not sympathetic, and then they want to give the person who's irritating a good swift kick and say, get a life, or something like that. Now that's...
Well, you know, Glenn, there actually is a little bit of truth to that. I mean, those of us who could be diagnosed as having ADHD have had more than our share of people in our lives telling us, you know, when we're asked to do things we don't want to do, like our homework, that we're being lazy. I mean, can't you identify with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if you look deeper, it's more about it not being stimulating, challenging, and interesting enough to get our automatic attention. That's where the problem comes in with my clients is, you know, I never have a problem getting them aroused and excited about doing something they like. It's only about getting them aroused and excited about doing their taxes.
Right.
You know.
Right. And that's where one of the main survival skills for adults with ADHD is to learn how to hire somebody to do your taxes.
Exactly.
Do what you do well. Do what you love doing. Do it as much as you can, as often as you can. And those things that you can't do or hate doing, figure out some way to do what you do well so well that you can make enough money that you can hire somebody to do the things you can't do.
Well, that's what I do. There was a real funny quote. He said that somebody once, and this guy is, his heart's in the right place. You know, he wants to help, and they all do. It's someone who once said, if you were in a bad mood and you wanted to design an environment with the idea of driving an ADD kid crazy every day, you couldn't come up with anything better than school.
Well, our public schools as they currently exist. I agree with you, Glenn. Glenn, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us. Absolutely. And the way to change our public schools to make them ADD friendly, as it were, is very simple and straightforward. Go back to Socratic teaching. Go back to the one-room classroom. One-room classrooms, and I'm not saying, or one-room schoolhouses, rather, and I'm not saying that this is, well, you'll get it in a second. In a one-room schoolhouse, you've got kids teaching other kids, and it is highly interactive and highly participatory. It has to be, because you've got, you know, 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds all in the same room. They're learning together, so you get the older kids teaching the younger kids. I saw a classroom in Taiwan. Taiwan leads the world in math and science scores. Leads the world. The British government sent a delegation of teachers and the British Teachers Union over to find out what was going on. They came back and they concluded that the reason Taiwan had such great test scores, such great science and math skills, was because the parents were secretly teaching their kids at home at night. That's not the case. I actually sat in a classroom in Taiwan and saw this with my own eyes. The teacher stood up. Now, this was all in Chinese, so I had to, you know, basically figure out what was going on, and somebody translated some of it for me. But basically, here's what happened. The teacher had 40 kids. These were 10-year-old kids. Teacher stood up, and she said, and she explained the lesson. The 1 hour, she had an hour, and she explained the lesson in 5 minutes. Here's how we do long division, or whatever it was. I don't remember what it was that she was teaching. And then she looked around the classroom, and she said, now, who understands this? And out of 40 kids, maybe 7 of them stood up. And she said to them, great, you now teach those around you. And the kids who didn't understand it formed little circles around the kids that were standing. And the kids who were and then she became a resource, walking around the room, helping out the kids who were understanding to teach their peers. And the kids who were sitting, when they got it, when they finally reached the point where they understood it, they stood up and participated in the teaching. So you didn't have kids sitting around through half the classroom waiting for the other kids to catch up with them. You didn't have kids, you know, be frustrated and bored. It's like learning moved across that classroom like a wave. And that's one of the reasons we started a private school in New Hampshire, the Hunter School. You can find it at hunterschool.org is the website, just for ADHD kids. We started that 7-8 years ago, and it's doing really well. Monica in Santa Fe has a comment on Ritalin. Monica, thanks for calling. This is Tom Hartman. You're on the air.
To a lot more that's been said since I called in first. But I just wanted to give a practical example, because I have a daughter who's now 17, who we adopted when she was 4, and I needed to take her to therapy. She was a special needs kid. And the psychiatrist insisted I put her on Ritalin. And I was like, I read all the small print about how it can stunt your growth and all these different things, you know. And I thought, this poor little kid, she's been through so much, to drug her now would be really unfair. And then even years later, I didn't give her the Ritalin. I actually tried homeopathics and diet, and she got much better.
Great.
But she's one of those kids who doesn't do well in regular school setting, but she's already got she did her GED, she's already off to college and everything, you know. And she's got some problems, but it's like, you know, I think it's not only the gene thing, but because if a kid is really has been in a really stressful environment where they can't trust their home situation, where it's not safe and everything, they become hyper-vigilant about their environment, you know.
Yeah, and that's
they don't
different
want to sit,
from ADHD.
Sit down, you know. So I think there are many elements, you know, in this, but I'm so glad to hear this because you know, when you first began talking to me, I thought, boy, I'm so glad I resisted this, you know, because she's really fine and she's a real go-getter, you know.
Yeah.
But it was amazing how many therapists thought, and teachers, she absolutely has to be on Ritalin. And
well,
we just
it's
found
amazing.
Other solutions, and she's fine.
Great. That's wonderful. As they say in Australia, good on you, Monica. I think that's wonderful. Thanks for calling and sharing that with us. This is the thing, and so many parents are saying this now. You know, there's nothing wrong with my kid. See, before the 1970s, if a child was failing in school, everybody looked at the teacher and said, hey, you're failing to teach this kid. And in the 1970s, this phrase came along called learning disabilities. It didn't exist before the 1970s. It became very fashionable. And with that single phrase, those single two words, we shifted the burden of education from the shoulders of college-educated adults onto the shoulders of seven-year-old kids. And it's wrong. It's wrong. We don't have learning disabled children. Every child in our school has learned how to walk, has learned how to talk, is absolutely capable of learning anything he wants or she wants to learn. Kids are learning machines. What we have are teaching disabled schools and teaching disabled teachers. And part of the problem is this awful No Child Left Behind stuff and just this you know top-down system. We need to give our local schools more independence, more autonomy. We need to pay our teachers better and give them more independence and more autonomy. And they can experiment with things like what I described that works so well, and we can reform our schools. I mean, this is not rocket science. I used to travel around the country doing in-service trainings for schools, and I've seen this work, seen it work over and over and over again. John in Brookings, Oregon, has some thoughts on this. John, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hey, John, you're on the air.
Yeah. I subscribe to a little weekly publication, Science News. It's a great publication.
Yeah, I get it too. It's wonderful.
Yeah, well, the latest issue, there looks like they may have found some brain organic clues to ADHD. Article's kind of long, but
The bottom line is that what they found with MRI studies, magnetic resonance imaging, was that the brains of kids with ADHD were physically different from the brains of kids who don't have ADHD. But that doesn't mean that they're disordered, John. If you do MRI scans on left-handed kids, you'll find that their brains are different from right-handed kids.
No, it just points to an organic...
Yeah, they're absolutely different. Thanks for the call, John. I appreciate it. Yeah, the ADHD brains are different from, quote, normal brains. There's no doubt about that. And there is a genetic cause for it, and the gene has been nailed down as this dopamine receptor gene, the DRD4 gene, and a particular variation of it, the 7R allele. Linda in Florida has some thoughts on this. Linda, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a child who is ADHD. He's in seventh grade. He's not learning disabled, but he has been medicated since he's in kindergarten. And he's actually been a walking chemistry experiment because we've tried a variety of different drugs to cater to the issues that the teachers and the students, I have to tell you, have with my son.
Mm.
And I guess I had some issues with some of the things that you're saying. Simply because it's not only the teachers that have problems, it's other students, it's other kids, these kids' age, that have problems with very extreme cases of kids with ADHD. And I want to hear your comments on that.
Sure. And thanks, Linda, for the call. I would say, first of all, that those other kids are also, just like the teachers, stuck in a broken system. And they're reacting to children who are reacting to the broken system, and that's a terrible tragedy. Secondly, I've said for as long as I've been talking about this, I mean, my first experience with this started in 1978 when I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely emotionally disturbed and abused children in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village, which is still there in Rumney, New Hampshire. And the state of Vermont has me rostered as a psychotherapist, and And way back then, you know, I was first getting that these kids were different. But I think that, and from that point in time right up until today, one of the points that I make about Ritalin is that I don't think that Ritalin is so toxic that it should never be used. My point is that if, and in fact, what I would do with my own kids, for that matter, is if the only option that I had was for my child to be in a public school where the only way he could succeed or she could succeed would be to take Ritalin, having success in school is, well, let me rephrase it. Being a failure in school is more destructive to a child's future, to their life, and to their emotional well-being, in my opinion, than is taking Ritalin. So if the only choice I had was to keep my child in public school, then and on Ritalin, I would say that that's probably the, you know, if that's the only choice, that's the choice to make. On the other hand, with our first child went all the way through public school. Our second child, when we put him in a private school, you know, halfway through, and our third child, we homeschooled. And so there are alternatives, and there's one of the homeschooling organizations on the web I recommend all the time, oakmeadow.com. It's a great school. It's not specifically for ADHD kids. It's just a Steiner school. Mike in D.C. has some thoughts on ADD. Mike, we got about 20 seconds here, but I can hold you over the break if you'd like. Something quick?
Two quick comments. Let me get one out real quick, and then if you can hold me, it'd be great.
Sure.
One thing, I think part of the problem with ADD is the normal childhood behavior is being described as ADD.
Yeah. This absolutely. Increasingly, we are pathologizing what 50 years ago would have been considered the norm, and that's a terrible problem. Mike, I'll hold you on for your second comment. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Well, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquigels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquigels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquigels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquigels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquigels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear, we did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on when corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working in middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. Where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets. The eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
With ADD are the champions. You know, it's funny. I speak at these ADD conferences all around the country, and there is this sense of tribe yes, I know what that's like. I'm one of them too. It's, anyhow, Mike in DC, you were making another comment there.
Okay, a little expansion on the first point is that also we in the States especially have forgotten that there actually is a parental component here. And we turn our kids over insufficiently socialized to teachers who are insufficiently equipped to deal with these kids.
Yeah, you just touched on three issues. One is that we have a situation now in the United States where more than half of all children come home to an empty house.
Correct.
You have two, between divorce and two, but mostly it's both parents having to work, which is the evisceration of the middle class by conservative fiscal policy starting with Ronald Reagan, the destruction of the middle class, number one. Number two, you've got kids watching TV more than they're interacting with other human beings and, outside of school. And number three, I forgot. See, there goes my ADD.
The second point is partially, especially in the U.S., again, I think a large part of this comes from the mistaken feminization, if you will, of young males. Because on the one hand, you have feminists screaming, "There's no difference between men and women," which there is. And
I don't think feminists are screaming that.
They were saying
there should be no difference in opportunity. Between
oh no,
men
there
and
shouldn't
women.
Be. I agree. But there are differences, and I mean very deep differences.
Sure, and I think feminists would be the first to acknowledge that.
I mean, first of all, women have much better color vision than men do.
Yeah, but the bottom line here is, and this is my third point, which is I think where you're going with this, and that is that when we start paying our teachers like the professionals that they are, they hold in their hands the future of our country. When teaching is a profession where you can reliably make $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000, $120,000 a year, you're going to start getting really high-quality teachers in, and we're going to see a transformation in education in the United States. And we really need, and it's not that many teachers, it's not that much money when you're talking about the future of a nation. Mike, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We had a couple more callers on this topic. If you want to hang on the line, we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Another audio clip from the production meeting.
Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A divided Supreme Court upheld the broadest restrictions on campaign donations in nearly 30 years Wednesday, ruling the nation is better off with limits on the financial influence of deep-pocket donors, even if money can never be divorced from politics. Rooting out corruption, or even the appearance of it, justifies limitations on the free speech and free spending of contributors, candidates, and political parties, the court said in a 5-4 decision. George W. Bush found himself in the awkward position on Wednesday of calling the leaders of France, Germany, and Russia to ask them to forgive Iraq's debts just a day after the Pentagon excluded those countries and others from $18 billion in American-financed Iraqi reconstruction projects. White House officials were fuming about the timing and the tone of the Pentagon's directive, even while conceding that they had approved the Pentagon policy of limiting contracts to 63 countries that have given the United States political or military aid in Iraq. Many countries excluded from the list, including close allies like Canada, reacted angrily on Wednesday to the Pentagon action. They were incensed in part by the Pentagon's explanation in a memorandum that the restrictions were required for the protection of the essential security interests of the United States. Plans to deploy the 1st Battalion of Iraq's new army are in doubt because a third of the soldiers trained by the U.S. occupation authority have quit, defense officials said Wednesday. Touted as a key to Iraq's future, the 700-man battalion lost some 250 men over recent weeks as they were preparing to begin operations this month, Pentagon officials said. The battalion was highly celebrated when the newly retrained soldiers completed a 9-week basic training course in early October. The graduates, including 65 officers, were to be the core of an all-Iraqi army. It was uncertain exactly why a third abandoned their new jobs, though some had complained that the starting pay, $60 a month for privates, was too low. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
Arvin, California Mayor Juan Olivares had just one request of a Kern County Sheriff's deputy during a traffic stop. Don't call me dude. Olivares planned to file an official complaint with the Sheriff's Department, seeking to have the deputy fired for what he called disrespectful behavior. The deputy stopped Olivares on November 23rd. Olivares, who was driving, said he was ticketed for having illegally tinted windows on his vehicle, and a passenger received a citation for having an open container of beer. Olivares didn't dispute the charges. He just took issue with being called dude. This is Don Waller in New York, dude.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear, we did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Calling Law and Order. I don't mean the American ideal of justice. In this case, I'd settle for the Law and Order television show. I'm talking about a corporate story that would have made great television news, but the media missed it. Perhaps they were too busy covering George W. posing with the Queen of England on this same day to be able to cover a story about the theft of billions of dollars from us taxpayers. So why not call on fiction to give us the news? After all, Mark Twain observed, the difference between fact and fiction is that fiction has to be believable. This factual story of finagling seems unbelievable. But the fictitious Law and Order show would not have to stretch to dramatize it, for Senator Carl Levin provided all the drama a producer could want. KPMG, the accounting giant, was caught illegally designing and selling tax shelters whose sole purpose was to allow the wealthiest Americans to escape paying their taxes to Uncle Sam. In just 4 years, these rich folks dodged $1.4 billion in taxes they owed, and KPMG collected $124 million from them in tax avoidance fees. In November, KPMG was grilled by Senator Levin. In an investigative hearing, a supervising partner of KPMG's tax scam ducked and dodged, claiming he knew nothing. But Levin had internal emails, including one written by this guy, saying that the scams were, quote, designed to dodge taxes. The guy shucked and jived, trying to blame subordinates while also claiming that these were legitimate investments that only coincidentally allowed tax avoidance. But Levin leaned in, asking, did you write designed? Yes or no? The guy's voice grew tighter. Levin pressed harder. The Senate room grew silent. And the KPMG man finally whined, I don't know how to change my answer. Then, in a made-for-TV moment, Levin dryly said, try an honest answer. This is Jim Hightower saying, now that would have been great television.
Here she is, thank you, in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really Mandarin? Mm-hmm.
Ban chi la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Ban chi la.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. In light of the White House moving forward with drug discount cards, the Center for American Progress has unearthed evidence of significant financial and political ties between George Bush and one of the companies who stands to make the most money
from this new Medicare discount card program. I'm going to tell you about that after taking this call. Just want to close out this topic on ADD, and then we'll move along. David in Santa Fe, thank you for calling. Thanks for waiting over the news. 1-800-TALK-YES or number. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You are on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I wanted to offer another perspective on this ADD thing. If you think of attention as being like a muscle, it's something that you can strengthen. Attention, the attention muscle, without any effort to strengthen it, bounces all over the place in response to the environment. And if you think about it, attention and human consciousness are basically synonymous. So we all have this attention muscle. It's not just something that we have. It's something that we operate, but only if we know how to strengthen it and do it. First, you have to strengthen it. And once you've strengthened it, then you can deliberately control it.
I agree, David. And in fact, that's how neurofeedback works, EEG neurofeedback, which is a very effective treatment. And in fact, historically in our society, we had systems in place that trained attention. Attention systems. We had long family dinners, and kids were expected to sit at the table and behave themselves. And you know, it's those of us who are old enough actually remember this stuff. People went to church. People used to do religious rituals that involved concentration, like the rosary. Doing a rosary or a mala bead, or, I mean, every religion has a variation on it, davening, different forms of prayer, is very similar to EEG neurofeedback, in that when the mind starts to wander, there's something there. In the case of a rosary, there's the bead that brings you back to the moment and continually reinforces teaching you to pay attention to the way that you pay attention. And we've, you know, virtually right across the board, so many of our religions have lost lost the regular practice, particularly among children, of participating in these things. And finally, play. Play used to be something that required concentration. When I was a kid, you know, nearly 50 years, I mean, I'm 53 now, I think. 52, whatever, I'll be 53. And, you know, that many years ago, a lot of the play, when I was a kid, we played with blocks, we played with rocks, we went out and walked around, we chased frogs. I mean, you know, it was being in the world rather than being continuously stimulated in a passive way. And you had to pay attention to what you were doing and bring creativity into it. So I absolutely agree with you, and I think that our culture in many ways today is conspiring to prevent our children from learning how to develop their attentional mechanism. And that's not attention deficit disorder. That is a cultural problem that we have, that's a very real problem that nobody is addressing, because the biggest piece of it, in my opinion, is the pervasive and corrosive influence of television in our homes. And, you know, of course, TV defines the agenda, what gets talked about, by and large, and TV is not going to talk about how destructive TV is.
Well, I know about a program that is bringing attention exercises to the fore. It's a book called Resurfacing, and it has a whole bunch of exercises that people can do to strengthen attention. It's been brought into some schools in Florida, and they're having great results with it there, and I know of other people that are using it outside in private groups, too. Could I give a number on how people could find out about it?
No, but you can give us the author of the book.
His name's Harry Palmer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And his group is called Stars Edge International of Florida.
Right. Okay, great. And Resurfacing is the title of the book. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, David. I appreciate the call and the info, and I will check it out, and I'm sure probably many of our listeners will as well. This is Tom Hartman, and now moving along. We've done our Everything You Know Is Wrong topic, I think, hopefully justice. This could turn out to be the political scandal of the new century. I mean, this is like Teapot Dome, you know, where it was discovered that Albert Fall, the Secretary of the Interior, was, you know, had a little business relationship on the side with the guys that were leasing the oil reserves of the federal government at Teapot Dome. And here we have, well, let me just share this with you. I'll just read it straight. This is from the Progress Report. The Center for American Progress is this new progressive think tank in Washington, D.C. And they really found one here. Just 2 days after President Bush signed the new drug industry-backed Medicare legislation into law, the White House announced the details of the Medicare discount drug card program. in which Medicare will contract with private pharmaceutical benefit management firms. These are called PBM, Pharmaceutical Benefit Management. Remember that, the PBMs, okay? The United States government, Medicare, is going to contract with them to provide people either to endorse existing discount cards or provide people with new cards. The cards have been assailed for not guaranteeing any price discounts while potentially driving millions to these PBMs. So why then is the president so adamant that everybody should have these cards? Well, now, prior to reading this report, I assumed that it was because it was an election year trick. See, everybody's going to get a discount card right away. And then after the elections in 2004, in late 2005 and early 2006, you're going to have to give up your discount card and instead decide whether you're going to get your drugs through Medicare with the donut hole and all that, or whether you're going to go to a private insurance company. So my thought was, this is just a stunt to win him the election. And I am sure that there's a big chunk of that in there. But it turns out there's more to the story. Turns out George W. Bush has an extremely close financial, professional, and political friend. There's a guy named David Halbert. He is the CEO of a company called Advance PCS. And the Fort Worth Star Telegram, as the Fort Worth Star Telegram reported back last year on 1802, quote, before starting what would become Advance PCS, David Halbert helped clean up a deal with Harkin Energy that had prompted an SEC investigation of George W. Bush. Remember that? How George W. Bush was being charged with insider trading, the exact same crime that Martha Stewart is being charged with. And the SEC looked into it and decided not to look into it. And they wrote a letter saying, we haven't actually looked into this. Don't consider this vindication. Yet during his campaign, George W. Bush said, I've been investigated and vindicated. And in fact, neither was the truth. Of course, we would expect that it wouldn't be the truth coming from George W. Bush. But it's remarkable here. So it turns out the guy who, David Halbert, according to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who helped clean up a deal with Harkin Energy, that had prompted an SEC investigation of George Bush. After the investigation, Halbert then invited Bush to become one of the original investors in PCS, Advance PCS, a transaction that made the president $1 million profit. You get this now? This guy cleans up George Bush's insider trading thing with the SEC, and then invites Bush into a company where Bush makes $1 million. And by coincidence, this guy and his company are the ones who are going to be making hundreds of millions of dollars in all probability as a result of this Medicare bill, because they're the ones, well, let me continue. Soon after assuming the presidency, Bush paid Halbert back in kind, soliciting his help in writing the 2001 drug discount card proposal that is now part of the new Medicare law. Halbert brags about the complicity, saying the White House specifically asked him to help write parts of the plan. As the Fort Worth Star-Telegraph reported on 7-18-01, this is 2 years ago, Advance PCS has been working with the White House to create a nationwide private discount card program. David Halbert, Advance PCS's chief executive, said the Bush administration contacted his company about 2 months ago. End quote. When Bush announced the original plan, quote, Halbert stood next to the president in the Rose Garden and said it was quite an experience, end quote. So now, what does this mean? Well, the drug discount cards may not be great news for seniors, but they are terrific news for giant PBMs like David Halbert's company. Advance PCS, along with four other companies, controls, quote, 80% of the PBM market and up to 90% of the mail-order pharmacy business. And the plot thickens. These five companies control 90% of the mail-order pharmacy business. These companies will be hired by drug plans to, quote, negotiate with drug makers, issue discount cards, and line up networks of pharmacies, end quote, all without a guaranteed price savings for seniors and with collateral damage to local pharmacists. They're going to be putting local pharmacists out of business because they're going to be offering mail-order discounts. As Bloomberg News wrote on January 29th of this year, the system is designed to steer, quote, patients away from pharmacies and into mail-order businesses run by pharmacy benefit managers such as Express Scripts, Inc. and Advanced PBS. That's David Halbert's company, the guy who fixed the SEC investigation into George Bush and gave George Bush $1 million in profit by allowing him to be one of the initial investors in Advanced PCS, which is now the company that's going to benefit from the Medicare bill. It gets even worse. Advanced PCS has already faced lawsuits over market manipulation in the past, quote, by failing to disclose the extent of their financial ties with manufacturers, end quote. In fact, the AARP sued them last year, accusing, quote, Advanced PCS in court of not only illicitly diverting seniors from its drug discount plan, but of actually putting them at risk for potentially dangerous drug interactions, end quote. Despite these lawsuits, the White House is further rewarding Advanced PCS by refusing to require that they pass along any savings on drug prices to seniors. As the New York Times reported, quote, sponsors of drug discount cards will be allowed to change their prices and the list of covered drugs on a weekly basis. In August, the Bush administration pushed Congress to kill a provision in the Senate bill that made it illegal for drug companies to push up prices more than once a month. And the Senate complied. Why? The Bush administration said, and I quote, price stability is not a requirement of the drug benefit, end quote. And here's the final nail in the coffin. Halbert was also deeply involved in catapulting George W. Bush into the political spotlight. According to the Center for Public Integrity, in 1986, Harkin's CEO introduced Bush, the company's new director and consultant, as the son of then-Vice President George Bush, to a little startup healthcare company. He put in a modest investment and a few years later walked away with a six-figure windfall. That company was David Halbert's, and 8 years later, when Bush was running for Texas governor and scrambling for campaign cash, the company came through. Quote, in 1994, when the company was known as Advance Healthcare and Bush was making his first run for Texas governor, those insiders gave him $23,700 for his first gubernatorial run, including $14,500 from Halbert, his brother John, their father, and their wives. The smoking gun, my friends. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, I sent my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There is a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The con and conservative. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And here, let me just recap this real quickly for you. We have five companies, five corporations, one of the largest being Advanced PCS, that control 80% of the market for these drug discount cards, which are now going to be, you know, authorized, and now your tax dollars are going to pay for, and 90% of the mail order pharmacy business, which these cards will encourage people to use. This one company, Advanced PCS, sued by the AARP, is headed up by a guy, David Halbert, who helped make George Bush governor of Texas, who helped fix the SEC investigation into George Bush's insider trading with Harkin Energy stock, who brought George Bush in as an early investor when he was the son of the vice president in the company that is now called, it was then called Advanced Healthcare, is now called Advanced PCS, and George Bush walked away with up to $1 million in profit and then went on to become governor. This guy, the ultimate insider, this guy is the one who back 2 years ago wrote the prescription discount card provision, which his company was just coincidentally set up to provide, that never made it into law, that is now front and center in the Medicaid bill that was just passed. Does it get any stranger than that? Margaret in Santa Fe, what are your thoughts on this? Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Tom, when I listen to you, I get so angry because I know that everything you're saying is correct. You know, you just brought back to my mind what happened to Bush on that inside trading. When that happens, they just put it in the paper, and then everybody forgets about it. Yeah. And one of the things that really has been irritating me is when I watch Bush and I see him speaking, and he talks about the war, and he talks about Medicare and everything. And he said, well, the Americans are with me. Well, I'm an American. I'm not with him. How many other Americans are not with him? So why don't they speak up? And the other thing that gets me upset, you tell so many things that I know are factual. I don't see why the Democratic Party doesn't use that as a propaganda wedge like the Republicans do. Because when the Republicans come, one way or another, they always throw it back on the Democrats. And I don't know why the people don't come out and vote and understand that.
So, well, Margaret, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I hate to call all the time, but whenever I hear you talk, I think the Democrats ought to take some of the information that you got and go ahead and use it like they're doing. And I listened to Lou Dobbs also, and he came on yesterday with some interesting things. He always comes out interesting things, just like you and Peter from California. But the thing is, nobody seems to listen and take the advice and go ahead and work on it and believe that what's being said is right. I've never seen so much corruption in my whole life, and it's been a while. And I know what you're saying about the medication, because I belong to a medical club where they're supposed to give prescription drugs, and I see where they keep going up and up and up. And mm-hmm. I don't know why we can't go and do something in, like Canada. Whenever the Democrats were in, we had price control on drugs, and that's what they should do.
Yeah, Margaret, very well said. I think the things are actually changing, Margaret. Howard Dean, Dennis Kucinich, a lot of these guys are actually starting to speak out and speak out loudly against the corruption of this administration. And there are not a lot of us who are in the media right now who are telling the truth. I mean, the great vast right-wing echo machine is still out there, but it's changing. It's changing, and you're going to hear more and more voices like mine on the air. And I think it's a great thing, and I have a lot of confidence that Bush says all America's with him. We'll find out in November 2004. Margaret, thank you for your call. It's always wonderful to hear from you, and you are so articulate.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&D presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's to my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Foreign fish are moving up the Mississippi River to find a place that seems more like home. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Two species of Asian carp were imported into the United States in the 1970s to clean up algae at fish farms in some southern states. The carp escaped and got into the Mississippi River through drainage systems, flooding, and runoff. The fish are like underwater vacuum cleaners, and people in the upper Midwest are worried about what they'll do as they swim upstream. Jerry Rasmussen is a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says the bighead and silver carp eat huge amounts of tiny plants and animals known as plankton. Rasmussen says they're eating up the stuff native fish need to survive.
All young fish feed on the small plankton, so a species coming in and consuming huge volumes of this material obviously is going to impact the system significantly.
Rasmussen says the carp are moving north to find waters that are more like their native homes in China. The carp could enter the Great Lakes through a canal in Chicago that connects the watershed of the Mississippi River to Lake Michigan.
The southern end of the silver carp range in China is really right about the latitude of Chicago. And so we feel that the reason we're seeing this northward migration of these critters is that they're looking for more desirable, cooler water habitats that they like better. And so if they got through Chicago, through the canal there, they could potentially spread all the way far into Canada.
An electric barrier has been built in the Chicago Canal to try to stop the carp. Elsewhere in the upper Midwest, people are starting to worry about what will happen as the fish move further up the Mississippi and reach the many rivers and streams that feed into it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday, from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, it will.
Come November.
It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die.
Yeah, I'm up for that, too. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. I love that bumper music. Well done. I think that's thanks to Brad Walrod for pulling that together. David Halbert, CEO of Advanced PC. This is just a little glimpse. It's like lifting up the edge of the tent, and you get to see the circus going on inside, the incredible corruption of the Bush administration, the crony capitalism. As I've said before, I defy anybody to call me and define one piece of legislation that this administration has proposed and passed which was not written for a corporate special interest. Just one. I would like to hear just one. I have been looking, and I have been unable to find one. This is absolutely, without a doubt, the most corrupt administration in the history of America. They have beat out of Ulysses S. Grant it's breathtaking. Pamela in Iowa has some thoughts on this. Pamela, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, no problem. I have to say I agree with Martha. Your show is a source for truth and news. And I have a specific question. I have an article that was downloaded from the Internet from August of this year. It's old news to people who listen to left free speech radio. It's about the lawsuit by a Texas woman, sexual harassment lawsuit. I have heard since then, I can't confirm it, I don't have a computer, but I've heard on different talk shows that this woman's obituary appeared in the Houston Chronicle sometime around September 22nd. Did you hear or do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I got the emails that floated around about it. I have not done my homework in by way of verifying either the veracity of her sexual harassment lawsuit or her death. So I'm sorry I can't speak to those issues.
Okay. Later on today here in Iowa Falls, Chip Carter and Joe Trippi are going to be speaking at the library. I made a copy of the downloaded article, and I wanted to include the mention of her death. But like I say, I'm kind of isolated up here. I don't have a computer. I don't even have television anymore. I just listen to my Sirius radio.
Yeah, well, that's great. Pamela, when you see Joe and Tripp, please, number one, say hello to them for me. And number two, the problem with this kind of issue, and this is where I'd like you to tread very lightly, is that let's say that there was a woman who was sexually harassed by George W. Bush, that she filed a lawsuit against him, and that he got some goons to kill her. I mean, you know, the worst case scenario, which frankly I can't imagine, but let's say that that's actually what happened. It still falls into the category of Vince Foster was killed by Hillary Clinton. It immediately typecasts, you know, the accuser as being somebody who's into conspiracy theories, you know, oh, you know, we know who shot JFK kind of thing, when there is such rampant corruption and such clear crimes. I mean, from George Bush going AWOL for over a year, which is a federal felony, to his insider trading, which is a federal felony, to his cocaine arrest, which he then covered up by getting his driver's license reissued when he became governor of Texas. And there's trails on all these things. I mean, if you want to pin something on him that has to do with crime, there's no shortage of real stuff that's well documented. But even more important than that, I think, you know, more important than going after him as an individual is going after the behavior of this administration. I would much rather see you putting your efforts into pointing out the things like this corruption of this Medicare bill, the fact that, you know, this is destroying democracy. Having one bad guy in office, one crook in office, is nowhere near as bad as having all this legislation passed that's benefiting corporate special interests and destroying democracy in America. Does that make sense, Pamela?
Completely. I'll be 50 on my next birthday, and this Medicare has me worried about how I'm going to take care of myself when I'm older. You're absolutely right. The corruption is unparalleled.
Yeah, and even
the fact that Halliburton is charging us $2.64 for every gallon of gas they import when Iraqi companies import the same damn thing from Kuwait for 99 cents.
Oh, and they're up to $3.06 now,
war
Pamela.
War profiteering, and they should be, you know, jailed or fined, or the contracts should be removed from them. But, of course, it won't be, because all the major players in the world have been eliminated since Russia and Germany and France and Canada no longer can bid for certain contracts.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, every day there's just absolutely something new and scandalous that comes out. It's just that if a black woman in Texas died, somebody should at least read her story.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I have been waiting for somebody to read her story and expose her story, explain her story in a way that I can say this is legitimate. You know, like Bob Herbert did with the Tulia story. You know, with all those folks in that little town in Texas who were busted basically for being black in Texas. I mean, you know, and the phony drug busts and it got on CBS News and all that kind of stuff. And I'm hoping that somebody of the caliber of Greg Palast or somebody, you know, some competent investigative journalist will look into this. And if it's true, it'll come out. You know, I have some level of faith in that. But I can't personally say that I know that that's true, or I have even a high level of confidence that it's true. And therefore, that's why I haven't gone there on this program. But I do know that, like you said, what's true is that our future is being flushed down the toilet by George W. Bush. Our children are being saddled with debt that is absolutely mind-boggling, and we've got to stop that. We've got to change those things. So, Pamela, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and that's why I would encourage you to keep your focus, and even when you talk to Joe and Chip, to keep your focus on the issues that they can really talk about. I mean, you know, hand them the literature if you want, but I can virtually guarantee you that they won't do anything with it, because they don't want to be perceived as being like those Republicans who were saying that Hillary killed Vince Foster, you know, the conspiracy theorists and all that kind of. It's too easy to marginalize people when they get into that area. Let's wait for the news to come out. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jim in Oregon's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You are live and on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I am alive and kicking. I'm great, but I'll get better.
Great. My wife and I love your show, and I just had a quick question that I thought you might be able to give some insight into, and it's slightly off topic, but then I also had one comment that maybe you know about, and maybe you didn't, but I'm kind of at a loss for I'm curious whatever happened to Ken Lay, basically. I haven't heard anything about any sort of investigation or anything that's going on with whatever might come to be with him, and I was curious. I figured you'd probably know.
Did you expect one?
I'm sorry?
Did you expect one, Jim? I mean, he's the guy who he and this guy who's doing the drug thing are the ones who essentially made George Bush governor of Texas.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, I'm aware of that. I just hadn't heard if there was any sort of anything going on or whatever, if he was pardoned or if it's just going to be ignored like the CIA leak.
Well, you can't be pardoned until you've been convicted. And to the best of my knowledge, Ken Lay has not even been charged with a crime. I mean, there was some discussion in the newspaper in the business sections back about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago about looking into whether Ken Lay and Skilling and some of the others had failed in their fulfilling their fiduciary obligations, which is a fancy way of saying that they weren't acting in the best interest of the company. There was a Supreme Court case back, I don't know, a decade and a half ago or so, in which the court ruled that if the officers and directors of a corporation fail to behave, you know, if every action that they take doesn't advance shareholder value, then they have failed their fiduciary responsibilities and that could be considered a crime. It's a relatively small crime, but it's a crime. And that's why, you know, anybody who says a corporation has anything to do with democracy is wrong. Corporations have to do with making money, which is a fine thing in our system of government. But, you know, a corporation by law can't do good works just for the purpose of good works. They have to make a profit at it. And Ken Lay, similarly, can't steal money from his pensioners just because he wants to fatten his wallet. He's supposed to take that money and use it to advance Enron, and he didn't. So that may be the thing that they will nail him for. But I would be astounded if the Bush administration did this. I mean, this is a guy whose private jet George Bush flew all over the country on when he was campaigning for president.
Exactly.
This is a guy who had a private office. He had his own desk in the White House when Bush was president.
Yeah,
I just don't see it happening.
He helped assemble the whole Cheney energy.
That's right. He helped write the energy bill, and he brought California to its knees, and which led to a transformation from a Democratic governor to a Republican governor. I mean,
exactly.
You know, that this is all Ken Lay's work.
Yeah.
Bush is in debt to him big time.
Yeah, no doubt. I just didn't know if there was any sort of happenings or if it's just a dead news story that the media has just dropped. And I've my fears are correct, I guess. Yeah. My other, comment was, my wife and I love Howard Dean, but we also really appreciate and admire Dennis Kucinich. But I just heard on Democracy Now! This morning that Kucinich and Carol Mosley Braun and Al Sharpton are basically being dropped by ABC reporters. They're not going to be following their campaign any longer because they just don't see them as viable candidates. And I didn't know if you were aware of that. They just announced that, I guess, this morning.
Yeah, I was. That happened yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And frankly, I think it's payback. I think that Ted Koppel was humiliated by Dennis Kucinich in the debate the other night. I don't know if you saw it. But
yeah, I did.
You know, Koppel started out by talking about Dean and the endorsement with Gore, and then he started talking about fundraising. And basically, he was poking Dennis Kucinich and some of the other candidates, saying, you know, what are you guys doing? How come you're hanging around? You're never going to win. I mean, that was the subtext to it.
Yeah.
And Kucinich just ripped him up. You know, he said, you know, the trivialization of this stuff by the media, people like you, this is the problem. Here we've been on, you know, in this debate 30 minutes, and we haven't started talking about issues. We've been talking about fundraising and polls.
Right.
And I think that Koppel was so humiliated by that and so embarrassed by that. I mean, it was the biggest applause line of the whole evening that he said, that's it. No more coverage by ABC News of Dennis Kucinich. But in order to put a fig leaf over it so it didn't look like it was revenge, he said, and we're also not going to cover Carol Mosley Braun, and we're also not going to cover Al Sharpton because, you know, they're also low in the polls. But my personal take on this, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the ABC News organization is not that small, but the timing sure stinks. I mean, they would have to know that it would look like this.
Right.
And
whatever, I mean, he was so harsh with all the candidates. I wish if anybody were ever able to interview Bush, and I guess he's got some interview coming up this week or next week, but he never gets questioned like that or you know, really put to task. And you know, when he does, I'm sure that person would quickly lose their job. I wish Bush would be questioned that harshly as Ted Koppel did to a lot of the candidates.
Yeah, in the context of a campaign, I agree. On the other hand, right now, in theory, Bush is not campaigning, and
sure.
So if they're having there is a certain amount of deference that is due to a head of state, and although frankly, watching Prime Minister's questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see that on C-SPAN, you know, where Tony Blair takes a grilling from the House of Commons every week.
Mm-hmm.
What a healthy thing for
him. I know. I completely agree.
What a healthy thing. It's just incredible. But I suspect that they are not going to grill Bush the way that they did these candidates. And the rationale that they'll use is that he's not yet a candidate and won't be until after. Maybe they won't even start to treat him as a candidate until after the Republican National Convention, which is going to be just, you know, weeks before the election for all practical purposes. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, Jim. And let's keep an eye on it. Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. David in Missouri is on the line. Hey, where in Missouri are you, David?
St. Louis.
Oh, great city. A great city.
I'm sorry. St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
Well, you've brought up a great set of issues about corruption in government at that level. And here in our area, we've got 600 million, doesn't matter, gallons of refined gasoline in the ground across the river. And somebody did a 18-page article on it, in-depth, beautiful, named names, dates. What I don't
understand. Gasoline-causing pollution, you mean?
Yeah. They had a gasoline pipeline that had a huge leak in it for decades, and they just let it run. And, of course, it's not covered by Superfund because the gasoline industry made sure that they were not part of.
They were exempted.
That, yeah. So, you know, that's a real thing. The question I have for you is a practical question. Knowing about these things is great, but in a practical way, what can any one of us do about any of it?
Well, we speak up loudly and incessantly. Number one, write letters to the editor of your newspaper. People think that that's an old-fashioned thing and that it doesn't work any longer. But I'll tell you, politicians, Jack Kennedy used to, the first thing that he always read was the letters to the editor section when he was the senator from Massachusetts. And even as president, he did that with the Washington Post. I asked Bernie Sanders about that on this show a couple weeks ago, and he said, yes, that's a, you know, very important thing. Participate in websites that are interactive, if you know of blogs or whatever. We've got a bulletin board over on my website at tomhartman.com. They're all over the Internet. Get out there and get active. Contact your elected representatives. The number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121. And you call that number and you simply ask for whoever, you know, your senator or your congressman or congresswoman, and then you'll get a staffer on the phone and just say, listen, I have had it with corruption in government. I'm over it with you guys taking money from special interests. I'm over it with all the lobbyists, and I'm over it with the Bush administration acting like it's the mafia. You know, we don't want this anymore, and I want you to do something. I want you to tell me what you're going to do about it. And call that number, 202, area code 202-224-3121, and write letters to your elected representatives. I mean, if these are the things that actually bring about change, David, and you actually can bring about change if you do these things. So the music means we're up against the break. David, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in and sharing your concern. We do need to speak out. We need to speak out without ceasing. And then we can bring about a new America. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
The
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush. Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy. You know what I'm talking about.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding me? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want, power, great desire. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I wish that I could be.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Have you called your representative and said, hey, I'd like to know what you intend to do about the crony capitalism here in the Medicare bill between David Halbert and George Bush? 1-202-224-3121. One of the folks in our chat room suggested that you contact FAIR, www.fair.org, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. FAIR is the premier organization that looks into the media. And FAIR has a great media list. If you're concerned, for example, about ABC pulling their reporters off Dennis Kucinich, call them. Contact them. They're not invisible. They're certainly out there. You can find their email addresses. You can find their telephone numbers. You can find their addresses on the FAIR.org website. Contact your local ABC affiliate if it's a TV station. I don't think ABC owns very many radio stations these days. But, contact your local ABC TV station and say, hey, you know, pass the word up the chain. Why isn't there a reporter covering Dennis Kucinich anymore, for example? These are the ways that you pass these things along. And I think it's so important. We have this extraordinary gift of this democracy in which we live. This constitutionally limited democratic republic that people have fought and died for 227 years. And in order to preserve it from this epidemic of crony capitalism, this widespread corruption, we need to speak out. We need to get active and speak out. And you can start right now by calling your elected representatives. This is Tom Hartman. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont. Brad Walrod edited our music. It's been produced, the engineering was done by Shar Jones in Detroit. Thanks, Shar, for another great job. Thanks to all the folks from our chat room for hanging out with me during these 3 hours. And tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
To see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants.